Our podcast will begin in just a moment. Our podcast production and distribution made possible each day by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. 7 things to know about 529 plans. How to keep more of your ETF gains. The plus side of working longer. The right and wrong of annuities. These are talking points from recent Invest Talks. You can hear them again or for the first time on InvestTalk.com. Hear a complete replay. Just click on the Invest Talk tab on InvestTalk.com. And now, today's Invest Talk.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Tuesday edition of Invest Talk. Nobel Prize-winning economist Paul Samuelson was quoted as saying, "Investing should be more like watching paint dry or watching grass grow. If you want excitement, take $800 and go to Las Vegas." Now, that may not be the perfect opening for a program about investing, but it does help make a point and put things into perspective. Grass grow. You're watching your grass grow or paint dry. If you're going to invest, you don't want it to be too exciting. Because too exciting could mean huge losses, too, up and down. Everybody wants to double, triple, quadruple, 10 times their money. Everybody wants that, but to take those kinds of risks, you also have the possibility of the opposite happening. So you got to do your homework. You got to feel confident about your choices. You got to make logical, thought-out decisions. Okay, and stop watching your stocks every day, every minute, every day, every day, every day. It makes no sense. Turn off CNBC. Quit trying to micromanage your portfolio. That's not how it's going to work. You know, this day and age where everybody's plugged into instant access to everything on your cell phone, you could watch everything happen on your stocks minute by minute, by second. That does not help as an investor. It's okay to look at it if you cannot separate your emotions, not let it affect you at all. Most people can't do that when it comes to their money. You can't. So how do you control yourself? Really, that first thing is you really got to know who you are, know what kind of person you are. Are you a type A personality, a type B? If you're a type A, you have to do things to make sure that you do not react all the time. Because type A people are very intense. They have to be in charge. They got to do something. That's kind of not how investing works in the long run. It doesn't work that well. It works poorly in the long run if you're always trying to move in and out, change it, do this. It's just not a way to make a lot of money. It's not. You need to react to the market beforehand. You need to say, okay, these stocks, this is my core holdings, and I'm probably going to hold on to these for a very long time. And then this part of my portfolio, I might be a little bit more active, but I want to be proactive before things. Try to think ahead. And proactive doesn't mean trading all the time. It means I think I need to be in this sector over the next year or two. Okay, let it work. See, that's that kind of thinking. Not, well, I need to be in this week, and I'll get out next week when it goes to here. Then I'll be out and be back into it. You don't hear too many billionaire day traders or swing traders, do you? Because it doesn't work. Can it work? Yes. But does it work for you and me, the average person? No. Doesn't. So, and remember, stress starts in your head, the way you give yourself stress about your investment. It's in your head. You know, you got to have a calm mindset, okay, and try to concentrate. And again, very important to know what kind of person you are. Can you do that? You know, and also, if you want to be successful, you got to pay attention to the environment that you're in. You know, what kind of environment is going on in the economy, the world economy, the domestic economy, what's going on in industries? Is there sea changes going on? There's several of them going on right now. Part of them are going to be the talking points today. Anyways, I won't beat that into the ground. Can we help you with any decisions you're trying to make financially? Well, we want to, and that's what the show is about. You can give us a call right now. The line is always open 24 hours a day. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number.
I have a question about index funds, and I would appreciate if you would explain what an index fund is, what are the different kinds of index funds, how would you compare them to a mutual fund or an individual stock, and what are the advantages or disadvantages of buying the index fund. Thank you very much. I love your show, and it's very educational. Thank you very much again.
Okay, an index fund. Now, you can buy an index mutual fund or an index ETF, exchange-traded fund, ETF. You know, so you can do an ETF or a mutual fund and an index fund. All that is very, very, very simple. It's a fund where you invest in that follows an index. Now, what index? Well, that's the definition. You've got to find out what index it follows. So because there's hundreds of different indexes. The most common are the S&P 500. That's a broad-based index of 500 of the largest companies traded on the exchanges. And that's 500 companies. So that's 80% of the market cap of the entire stock market. So that's why people use the S&P 500 to follow the market, because it's broad-based. Then you have the Dow. The Dow 30 index is very common, called the Dow 30. That's the oldest index, and it's only 30 companies, 30 major companies, very big companies. And then there's the NASDAQ, the index. The NASDAQ is usually the NASDAQ 100, the 100 largest companies traded on the NASDAQ exchange versus the New York exchange. Then it goes on from there. Russell 2000, Russell 5000. You have to understand the differences, and they're all a little bit different from each other, okay? And then there's indexes that are produced by one company that does the same thing as another, like an S&P 500 Vanguard index is the same as the S&P 500 Fidelity index. Same thing. They're tracking the same thing. Now, an index is only a type of fund. It's not... It is a mutual fund. You said the difference between a mutual fund and an index fund. Well, mutual funds, there's millions of types of them, and one of the types is an index fund. Okay, so that's what index funds. Their advantage, you can instantly get diversification by buying shares of an index fund. You own a piece of all 500 companies in the S&P 500 index fund, all 500 companies. You own a little tiny piece. That's how that works. What men can learn from women about investing. When it comes to both saving and investing, women are just better at it. You've heard me say that on this show. It's just the way it is. Why is that? This is going to be our main talking point today. Also, globalization taking a back seat. Globalization. World Bank downgrades world and U.S. growth forecast again. Second time this year, by the way. We'll talk about that. And you know, I've talked about creative destruction, and one of my clients, Rich, thank you very much, sent me an article this morning that I really enjoyed. And I'm going to share parts of it with you today, all about creative destruction. And that kind of ties into my globalization taking a backseat talking point as well. And I'll explain why I say that later on the show. Anyways, that's what we're going to talk about. Of course, you come first. What do you want to talk about? You know, investing is not supposed to be entertainment, but it sure is interesting. I enjoy it. I enjoy it a lot. And you probably do too if you're listening to the show. You probably enjoy it. But remember, good investing is boring. It's not exciting. You know, if it gets too exciting, that means you're taking way too much risk. Emotions are driving you. So let's try to keep a lid on that excitement, everybody. We want to make money. And hopefully I can help answer any questions you have about that. My direct line is 888-99-CHART.
Music. You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
We're going to go to Dave in San Diego. How are you doing, Dave?
I'm real new to this game, and I have a question about IRAs.
Okay.
Yeah, I've got some money in a 401k from a different employer.
Yes.
And, you know, I don't want to just leave it in there.
No.
You know, their 401.
Right.
And I'd like to roll it into an IRA.
Yes.
Two-part question on that. Would I be able to take the IRA deduction if I do that?
No, you would not, because it's already in a tax-deferred vehicle already. In the old 401k. So rolling it over does nothing as far as being tax deductible. Now, once it's in an IRA, you can add to the IRA and deduct that amount you added.
That is the second part of my question.
Okay.
I've heard a lot of talk, you know, you can have this and that in an IRA. You can have stocks, bonds, blah, blah, blah. How exactly do you do that?
Okay, very good question. First of all, a 401k, if you work for an employer who offers a 401k and then you stop working for them, the best thing to do is roll that into an IRA. But the question is, how do I do that? It's very, very easy. Depending on what you want to do with the IRA, of course, with a 401k, you have choices in mutual funds. You can roll that 401k into like a Fidelity, a Vanguard, Schwab. I actually prefer Schwab, believe it or not. Into an account, and all you do is go to them and say, I want to roll my 401k that I no longer work there at now into a new IRA, let's say at the Schwab program, where I can pick any and all mutual funds, no load mutual funds I want. And they'll be happy to do that. We do it all the time where someone comes to us and wants to roll it into one of our programs. We do it for them. We, of course, have to get the paperwork, but we do it for them. We roll it from a 401k into a custodian, maybe Bear Stearns or Schwab, or, you know, there's many of them. And then from there, we manage the money on the IRA. Now, there is no tax consequences when you roll it directly from a tax-deferred 401k to a tax-deferred IRA. It's also not a contribution to an IRA because it's going from, you're just swapping. It's an equal trade. And once you open an IRA, you can now add money to that IRA if you wanted to. You can contribute to the IRA. And of course, it depends on if you make too much money, you can't, but that's a pretty big number. You just go to whomever you trust that you want to roll this into. It could be a bank. And you want to just put in a savings account. You go to the bank, say, I want to roll this 401k into a savings account. They'll help you with the paperwork. It's very, very simple, Dave. And if you have more questions about it, just call me at the office, 800-557-5461. 800-557-5461. That's my office number. Be happy to discuss it at length with you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Time now for this market update made possible by KPP Financial. U.S. stocks rose today, posting a partial recovery from the major losses seen following the U.K.'s vote to quit the European Union. The Dow Industrial Average up 1.57%, which over the past two sessions lost 900 points. It jumped 269 points to close at 17,409. The broader S&P 500 index up 1.78%, adding 35.5 points. All 10 main sectors finished higher. Energy, financials, and technology sectors led the gains, rising more than 2%. The NASDAQ Composite Index up 2.12%. The market reacted little to today's economic reports. The U.S. economy's annual growth rate in the first quarter was raised again 1.1% in line with expectations. However, the pace of growth was still one of the weakest performances in the past several years. U.S. house prices rose 1.1% in April. U.S. consumer confidence took a positive step higher in June. That number, though, does not reflect the Brexit decision. And that's our market update for June 28th, 2016. And now let's get back to this Invest Talk replay, a recorded program, but you can still ask your questions and they'll be answered on the next Invest Talk. 888-99-CHART.
This is Invest Talk. Let's see if we can do a little matchmaking. We want to help you match your real risk, your risk tolerance, yours. Not somebody else's, not compared to the market, just your personal risk tolerance. What's your risk level? How much risk do you feel comfortable taking in the market? You can use our free risk analysis tool on investtalk.com. It's just a few questions. Very easy. And if you have questions about investment risk, give me a call. 888-99-CHARGE. All you can get through right now.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
888-99-CHART is our number, everybody. You can reach us. We have lines open, 888-992-4278. Art Mendel Park, how you doing, Art?
Hi, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for the call.
Sure. I just wanted to find out if it's a good idea to get a home equity line of credit just in case I need it for, like, home repairs or something, because I don't have that much as far as, like, the savings where I can get to it. But mm-hmm. I've got, like, 401 or my IRA, but I have, like, ready cash just mm-hmm. in case if I need it for, like, home repairs, like I say. I just wondered if that's a good idea.
Well, I'm not a big proponent of home equity line of credit simply because you're borrowing money, and I'm not a proponent of borrowing money. Now, what you should do, what everybody out there should do, is try to set aside 3 to 6 months worth of expense to come up with to have in case there's an emergency coming on, you know, that you come across. I mean, I had a slab leak. Water leak in my kitchen, which, you know, cost $4,000 or $5,000 to fix once everything was said and done, and, you know, I had so you need to have some money set aside. It's okay to have it set up in case you need it, but a lot of times when we're talking about a home line of credit, but many times people use it because it's there, and the banks love for you to use it, but I don't like debt, and it's one of the debts that I would rather you not go through. Appreciate the call, Art. Thank you very much. How about Leon in San Mateo? Hi, Leon. How you doing?
I've been listening to you guys' show for maybe about a week now.
Okay.
I'm not an investor at all,
okay.
But I've always wanted to get in. I have no clue at all on what process it takes to get into doing something like this. I don't have a whole lot of money, but still.
Okay.
I would really like to get into the market and keep learning more from your program as well as other things I see on the internet.
Okay, Leon, you know, it's a great question. And just by the fact that you're listening and have the interest, you will be able to do this. It's not rocket science. I keep telling people, you don't have to be a genius. You just have to have the interest.
Yeah.
And yes, everybody started from somewhere. You just don't wake up in the morning, therefore, you know everything. No one. Leon, I learn stuff all the time, and I've been doing this for years. Now, if I can, let me give you a couple of suggestions, you know, if you're just starting out. First of all, don't buy just one stock. That's
okay.
Not a good way to start. I would suggest if you are going to start buying stuff, you either buy mutual funds or what's called exchange-traded funds, ETFs.
Okay.
Which are like mutual funds, but they buy and sell like stocks. And they're baskets of stocks, ETFs. Go to E-Trade, the ETF center on eTrade.com, and they'll tell you and describe the ETFs. And, you know, you can have an ETF of like an oil sector. You can have ETF in a country, you know, like China. You can have an ETF in biotech. So it gives you some more diversification, but you don't have a lot of money. You can buy just a few shares if you want.
Oh, okay.
Now, that will get you into the game a little bit, to play a little bit, but I would suggest that you read first and read some of the basic books. Peter Lynch is a very easy book. Peter Lynch, Beating the Street. I would strongly suggest that book. That book is 200 pages, okay?
Okay?
Very easy to read.
Oh, okay.
Beating the Street is an older book, but it's still in print. Or One Up on Wall Street by Peter Lynch. Also, I would suggest that you come to our conference. And we are all about teaching. These are teaching conferences. That's all they're all about. And if you have an interest and you want to get into a newsletter, we put out a newsletter. And the second section, we have 4 sections. It comes out every week. The second section is how to manage a portfolio of stocks, how to do it.
Okay.
Might be something you're interested in. Go to investtalk.com. You can sign up for there. Comes out every Friday.
Oh, okay.
You know, just by the fact that you are interested, you will learn how to do this.
Okay.
Leon,
well,
appreciate the call.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling.
Annuities, asset allocation, reading stock market trends, building a truly balanced portfolio. If it's important to you and you want to know more about it, we're here for you. 888-99-CHART.
Well, let's go to San Francisco and talk to Jose. How you doing, Jose? Thanks for calling.
As far as bonds go, if a company goes, they hold priority as far as getting paid out over common shareholders, correct?
Correct.
So there's less risk technically than a shareholder?
Much less risk than a shareholder.
And what about a preferred? Where do they stand?
They're after bonds. Number first in line is secured holders, and
okay.
They could be higher than bond holders. But
okay.
Bonds are considered secured too. There's several categories. There's secured holders, bond holders, preferred stocks, and then common stocks. So
okay.
In a liquidation, that's the order of who gets what money.
Okay.
If you don't mind, Jose, I'm going to expand on that idea a little bit. So when you buy a bond and the company goes under and it liquidates it, what Jose is saying is that, well, wait a minute, if I have a bond, don't I get the assets of the company? Yes, you're one of the first ones in line to get some of the assets of that company. Doesn't mean that if you bought $10,000 worth of bonds, you'll get $10,000 worth of assets. It might mean you will get 50%, 75%, but yours is first before the common stockholders. Usually the common stockholders get zip, nothing. Bondholders used to get something, and then that goes right to the book value of the company. If the company was a good, solid company, you'd probably get all your money if it filed bankruptcy. But of course, it probably wouldn't file bankruptcy. It was that solid.
All right, thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. We're glad you're with us today for InvestTalk. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley. Call and introduce yourself. I want to hear from you. I'd love to hear about what you're doing with your portfolio. 888-99-CHART is how to connect right now.
We thank you for subscribing. Join our InvestTalk insiders and gain access to a whole range of special reports and one-page info sheets on important money topics like managing a bond portfolio. Fixed income offers a lot of value points that equities do not. Read all about it. Become an InvestTalk insider on InvestTalk.com. Just click on the InvestTalk tab.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. There's been two new studies about women investors versus men, and both studies show women as better investors, one by Fidelity Investments, showed that men saved about 7.9% of their salaries, women 8.3%. Also, women are more successful, doing about 1 percentage point better than men. Now, why do you always hear that, you know, women they're behind men in savings? And that's because there's just not a lot of them doing it. Not because they're not better. They are better. There's just not enough of them. Some of the conclusions they had on these studies is that everybody needs to save more money. Save more money. Save more, not less, more. And another, don't overcomplicate things. That's one of the women's do that are better than men. They keep it simple. They sit on it. They don't try to overreact. They don't overreact like men do. And I think that goes to human nature. I think women are more of a nester's. They like to nest and stay calm and take care of things, where men are more hunters. They want to go out and find the great stock. I'm going to make a kill it on the market. Women are more, and seeing the stock market is much better suited to that nesting philosophy. It just is over time. So if you can, you as men, you men listening to the show, which mostly my audience is, you have to sit back and, again, understand what kind of person you are. And understand that if women are better investors, why is that? And how can you take some of that and emulate it? not saying you have to be a woman investor. I'm just saying take some of the lessons that are there and emulate some of those lessons. And you could do it. You could do it by, you know, segregating your portfolio. Take a, if you want to, if you have to be a hunter-gatherer kind of guy and you just got to be active, do it with just a small part of your portfolio so you can still have that feeling of hunting and gathering. But the rest of the portfolio, be more of a patient person. And it doesn't mean you never trade or anything like that. I'm not saying that. I'm not. I'm saying don't overtrade. Don't overreact. Don't, you know, which a lot of men do. Women do it too. I'm not saying they don't. We're just talking about the studies show that women are generally better investors than men. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278, whatever you want to talk about financially, we'll be happy to talk about it. Now, you know I've recommended the book quite often, Creative Destruction, right? Well, one of my clients sent me an article I thought was fascinating. And I'm going to start with the article started up with this fact, and I think it was very illuminating. In 1998, Kodak had 170,000 employees. 1998, and they sold 85% of all photo paper worldwide. And within a few years, their business was trashed. They eventually went bankrupt, right? They went bankrupt? Filed bankruptcy. Now, and what caused them to do that? Well, digital cameras, right? Look at your phone now. Who uses paper, you know, for a photo? Nobody. But digital cameras were invented in 1975. Remember, by 1998, Kodak was on top of the world. But the digital camera was invented in 1975, way before that. And why did it take so long? Well, because the first digital camera had 10,000 pixels. I mean, it was bad. But do you remember Moore's Law, where technology doubles every year, a year and a half or so? So it may, at some point, technology swamped and destroyed Kodak. Now, what's happening out there? What is now going on now that will do the same thing? How about artificial intelligence? How about in health? How about self-driving cars, electric cars? How about 3D printing? Maybe we're looking at the fourth industrial revolution coming up in the next few years. When? I don't know. For instance, artificial intelligence right now. IBM has a piece of software called Watson. It's artificial intelligence. And Watson can dispense legal advice. And the legal advice it dispenses, yes, it's basic stuff right now, yeah. But within seconds, they can give you legal advice that's 90% accurate. Whereas if you used a person, they're usually 70% accurate. So maybe might not be a good idea to become a lawyer. How about driverless cars? Driverless cars. Don't you think that's going to change the entire auto industry? And do you think, which auto companies, our auto companies are becoming more and more efficient, right? They are. They really are. Most car companies are becoming more efficient. They're trying to go with the electric cars, right? They're trying to start up. But their main business model is not electric cars, except for Tesla. But it's going to be autonomous. Tesla, Apple, Google are going to make tech companies on wheels. That's what's happening. Now, will the main, will Ford, GM, and Toyota, those guys stay up? Who knows? And think about what industries are going to get destroyed by these driverless cars. What industries are going to have, how about the insurance industry? The insurance industry, not even the car companies. Why? Well, if you have driverless cars, you're probably going to have a lot less accidents. If you have a lot less accidents, insurance premiums are going to plummet. What insurance companies are going to survive that? And this is the same thing will happen in manufacturing of 3D printing. Same thing's going to happen with healthcare. Same thing's going to happen with water production. Why do I say that? Well, think about water is scarce in Southern California, okay? And if water is scarce, How can we make get more water? Well, we got a whole ocean of water out there. Well, why don't we have desalination plants? Because they're very expensive. Because they're very expensive to operate in electricity, the power. Well, what's driving electricity now? Solar. Is that going to become more efficient, and therefore we get much cheaper water, and we'll just desalinate our water, and we'll have plenty of it someday? That kind of thing. Creative destruction. Read that book. James in New York. How are you doing, James?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I'm good. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
I wanted to ask about mergers and reverse mergers.
Okay.
And if it's possible, if there is a stock that, like a foreign stock, meaning like some stocks that you'll see that end in, ticker symbol will end in the letter F, meaning that it's a foreign holding. Mm-hmm. And what would happen if you are the holder of one of these positions and they either go through a merger or a reverse merger? Is there any benefit from being a holder of such a stock?
Well, it's not that complicated. It would be just like if it was a reverse merger or a merger here in the United States, except that, let's say there's a merger in a foreign holding that you have, and the merger is with some bigger foreign company buying your foreign company, and that bigger foreign company, or even an equal size foreign company, is not traded on our exchanges. And they buy your company that is traded on our exchanges, the whole thing. And it's no longer the ticker symbol that you have. What will happen if they buy it with cash? You'll, of course, get cash. But what if they buy it with stock? Now you're going to get foreign stock that's not traded on a U.S. exchange. That could happen. Well, how do you track it? How do you follow it? How do you sell it? You got to sell it on a foreign exchange. It gets expensive. It can get really messy, James. But as far as, is it a good merger or a bad merger? Is it going to affect me poorly or what? That depends, just like a merger here in the United States. Is it going to be accretive to profits? Is it going to be, are you going to be able to cut costs? All those things. And when you say reverse merger, you're probably talking about a split. It's the company will split off a part of its company. Now, is that split off going to be traded on our exchanges, or is it going to be some, because it's a foreign company, or is it going to be some companies traded on a foreign exchange that now you own a foreign stock that's not traded here? Same problem. You got to trade it on that exchange wherever it is and then convert it to American dollars. It gets messy. It just gets messy. So that's kind of what happens, James. So a foreign merger is just more complex, but there's no, you know, as far as good and bad, it's not much different than if it was just a local company here in the U.S. Appreciate the call, James. Thank you.
Thank you much.
Thank you. You can see my portfolio check updates on investtalk.com. These are very informal meetings where I just sit down and we have a conversation about your goals, your retirement accounts, what we do, how I could help you if I can, that kind of thing. It's not nothing. It's informal. And there's really not a sales pitch here. I will tell you what we do, but I'm at a stage in my life where I don't push anything. Never was really a very good salesman anyways. To reserve your spot, just go to investtalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab.
In a world that becomes more complex every day, KPP Financial Investment Programs are designed to simplify the individual investment process. We recognize that each individual has their own investment goals and risk tolerance. So no matter where your priorities lie, we have a strategy that fits your needs. Take a look. They're listed and described on investtalk.com. Just click on the Investments tab.
Jamie, San Diego, how you doing?
Hi, Steve. Thanks for taking the call.
Thanks for calling.
Steve, you oftentimes talk about a chart that is triple top, double top, and
yes,
so
ma'am.
On and so forth.
Yeah.
What period of time do you go look at it? 3 years, nine months?
Very good question, Jamie. Very good. And these are the kind of questions where I can go in more detail and show you in our conferences that we have, because it's a very good question. you first start with, Jamie, a one-year daily chart. In other words, it's a daily chart of the stock price over 1 year period.
Okay.
That's where you look for double and triple tops in the last 12 months. If the stock chart's not really telling you much, you can go back now to 3 years.
Okay.
But usually in that one-year period, it tells you a story.
All right.
Okay, but we generally look at a daily charts. I usually go back to, I go to a, what's called a weekly chart, and that goes back about 4 years.
Okay.
So I do that just to get a feel for what's really happening. Is this stock continuing to move up? Has it been here 2 years ago at this price and just can't seem to move from it? That kind of thing is what you're looking at.
All right.
Okay, Jamie?
Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks for the call. George, Aliso Viejo. How you doing, George?
I'm doing fine today. I'm in the dilemma of the fear and greed again.
Aren't we all?
I'm looking at retirement in 6 to 9 months.
Oh, good for you.
Now, in my 401k, I don't have very many choices.
Right.
I have been in a large cap fund, mm-hmm. about a third of that there, and a third in a small cap, and then a third in an international fund.
Okay.
Now, at this point, you know, there's no costs for me or tax implications or anything. Should I start drawing some of that out of there and getting in a cash position? Because I'm going to have to change it anyway.
Yes, you should, George, and I'm saying that because of your pending retirement.
Right.
It's time for you, now everybody listen up. It's time for George to get a little bit more conservative, and I would start taking some money, and if it was me, I'd take some from each one of those three categories. I wouldn't just dump one of them.
I was thinking of just maybe sell half in each one and just go to a basically a cash position.
I would do that. That would produce now is you got 50% in cash and 50% in the market. And are you about 60-something?
62.
Yeah. And see, at 62, that would be a much safer and a more of a proper balance unless you have lots of other assets that's not in your 401k that's conservative.
Well, the ones I have outside of that are not conservative, although I'm shifting it over a little bit.
Okay.
But that money is my growth money that I don't need for income, but I want to keep and grow and have it available in 5 or 6 years.
Okay, and I think that's perfect. So this money, I think you need to get more conservative. I agree with you 100%. The other money that you don't need for 5 or 6 years can stay aggressive, but start getting conservative with this retirement IRA 401k money.
All right, thanks a lot.
Appreciate the call. Let's go to Wayne in San Jose. How you doing, Wayne?
Fine. How you doing?
Good. I thank you for the call.
Yes, I wanted to ask about today. I read about on the it was the Kiplinger Letter News that somebody had written an article about. It's better not to put all your money into your 401k or 403b because in the future you'd be paying the taxes that were, you know, not going to be lower because your house is going to be paid off and odds are the tax rate is going to go up. They suggested just put in the match, put the rest into a Roth if you can, and then also if you could open an IRA and roll it into a Roth if you're, you know, over the maximum limit as far as income.
Okay.
So that was the question I had.
Okay. Wayne, that's an opinion, okay, and it's a valid opinion because the way the tax treatment. Now, I don't necessarily agree with them that you'll be paying more taxes in retirement because most likely you're not because you'll be a less tax rate. And I don't think tax rates are necessarily going to go up. They're pretty high now. So it's hard for me to imagine them going much higher. But most likely you'll be in a lower tax rate because you have lower income. And Roths are very good. The younger you are, the better they look because you never have to pay taxes on that money. So yeah, I like Roths. You're listening to Invest Talk. I'm registered investment advisor Steve Peasley. If you still have a question, we still have time. 888-99-CHART.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Let's go to Julia and Julian.
Hi. I have a question. I'm about 55 years old, and I'm a novice and don't really know where to start.
Okay.
I would like to get into the market probably with a mix of stocks and bonds and cash.
Okay.
I'm wondering what percentage you would recommend of each one.
There is a rule of thumb. It depends on you and how aggressive and how much money you want to invest. You know, if you're just starting out, I would be very timid about getting in the market right now.
Okay.
Your experience level is very low, so you want to be very careful. There's a rule of thumb that your age dictates how much bonds you should have. So if you're 55, 55% of your money should be in bonds. I'm not buying that rule of thumb because there are times when being in bonds is just terrible and times when they're better to be in bonds. The time not to be in bonds is when interest rates are low, because interest rates will probably rise. You're not getting very good yield. So it'd be better to go and do dogs of the Dow, high dividend paying, very big companies would get you more money, generally speaking. And don't buy too much of any one company. There's some rules. We never, for instance, I never buy more than 3 to 5% of a company, my overall portfolio. So that means you have a number of stocks. You can also invest using ETFs. You know what those are? Exchange-traded funds. They're like mini mutual funds, and you can buy sectors. Let's say you think the medical sector is a good place. Well, there's a number of ETFs that you could just, you give you instant diversification by ETF. You might want to start with the ETFs.
Now, as far as the taxes on ETFs, are you taxed on the gains like you would be in a mutual fund?
Yes. When you sell it, though. And unlike the mutual funds where you get capital gains distributed to you, even though
you
made, that doesn't happen in ETFs.
Oh, okay.
Only
good.
When you sell it, like a stock. You make gains or you have losses, that's when you have to pay the taxes.
Okay.
Thanks, Julie. Appreciate the call. Good luck.
Thank you.
Hope it works for you. I just talked about creative destruction. I mentioned different technologies that are going to cause a new industrial revolution, the fourth one. And we're talking about, technologies such as artificial intelligence, driverless cars, 3D printing. Well, the globalization, we also, for years, you've heard me talk about the world is getting more global, international. I have a feeling we're seeing that change. Now, this is something different than I've talked about. I think we're now going to see globalization slow down and maybe even reverse itself based on technologies, these new technologies. Robotics. Think about robotics. Think about 3D printing. Now, we might be at the very infancy of these things, but what's going to happen is the reason why the globalization took off over the last 20, 30 years was always trying to go to the cheapest place to make things, right? Well, then you ship them back and people put them together and different companies put the different parts all over the world, manufactured and shipped around, all that stuff. I have a feeling you're going to see more and more and more products, especially in the United States, because we're at the forefront of a lot of this, coming back here to be made. I think the next industrial revolution is going to be in first world countries like ours. Automation, advanced robotics, software technology. It's all going to usher in a new era of manufacturing. So that, and it's going to be shorter and shorter supply chains, And I think you're going to, here in the United States, they're going to want to make these things close to their market. It's going to change a lot, especially jobs. Some jobs are going to disappear completely and other jobs are going to be created. But I do think we're going to see globalization slow down, stop, and maybe even reverse a bit. I really do. And I think it's going to hurt a lot of third world countries, because they're not going to be able to keep up. Raw materials and stuff are still going to be necessary, obviously. But think about what this revolution will be. It'll be artificial intelligence. It'll be robotics. It'll be, software. Those kinds of things. Well, those don't happen necessarily in third world countries. To some extent, they will. It's interesting times we're living in. Remember that saying? May you live in interesting times. I think we are. Our time is up. If you have a question you want to ask me directly, you're welcome to send me a note, and I will get back to you. Just go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Steve. I'm Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Justin Klein and everyone at KPP, thank you for listening today. And let's get together again on the next Invest Talk.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.